There you go. The round of applause was big at Mar-a-Lago last night. And, you know, I'm watching the speech, and I'm saying to myself, this is a really good speech. Trump did not attack Republicans, which he has spent most of the last week doing. He talked about his success that he had policy-wise, which obviously were very impressive. And he talked about, you know, a lot of the policies that he would move and push going forward, which were also very impressive. The question for me in 2024 has not been about whether or not Donald Trump will get in there and do good things and do things that will benefit the American people, benefit the working men and women of this country. That's never been the question. There's not a doubt in my mind that he would accomplish that. My question this morning remains, can he get there? Can he get there? This is not about whether or not, you think back to 2016, right? In 2016, Republicans were split about Donald Trump, not just because they thought he was maybe unelectable and he had all the baggage and all these different things. That was part of it. But a lot of people were like, well, who is this guy really? Is he actually conservative? Is he really a Republican? They were all proven wrong. Every single one of those people were proven wrong. And by the way, he did win in 2016. And the way he won in 2016 was by making that election about one person and one person only. And it wasn't Donald Trump. It was Hillary Clinton. That gets lost in 2016 as the years and time goes on. Donald Trump won in 2016 because 2016 was a referendum on Hillary Clinton, who was the most unlikable, unpopular, modern-day American presidential candidate. And he used that to his advantage. And people said, you know what? Screw it. I'm giving this guy a shot. I'm giving this billionaire businessman, I'm not necessarily sure what he is or what he's going to do, but hell, I can't stand her. I'm giving him a shot. And to his credit, he connected with people. He brought people out to vote who had not traditionally voted. And enough independents were like, gosh, I can't stand Hillary. We've had 8 years of Obama. Trump it is. Let's go, baby. But then 2020 happened. And 2020 became about Trump instead of about Biden. Who won? Joe Biden won. And then, of course, the post-election nonsense took place. And to me, I don't see how, based on what we saw in the midterms last week, where Trump's core candidates did not perform well, the ones that he was most invested in did not perform well, because oftentimes they were either attached to 2020 election stuff or whatever else it might be. I don't see how you can look at the lack of success in those purple states, which you have to win to become president. You've got to win the purple states. It's not just about winning Missouri. It's not just about winning Kansas. But based on how his handpicked folks performed in purple states, I don't see how we can sit here right now, or how I can at least sit here right now. You may feel differently, and that's the beauty of this show. You're going to have a say over the next 4 hours at 5767710. I don't see how I can sit here right now and say that's a winning strategy in 2024. I do not doubt that if Trump gets in there, boy, things are going to get better, and they're going to get better fast. But you got to get there first, right? You have to get there. And tell me how the disciplined Trump from last night lasts for the next 720 days. That's the number, by the way, 720. But who's counting, right? A cool 720 days away. Tell me how that independent voter, which did not break in favor of Trump candidates over the last week or so, breaks in favor of them in 2024. And then the other factor of this, like everything else in politics, is also, what are your other options? If I sat here today and I saw that it was Trump making his announcement and then the other options were going to be like Larry Hogan, Larry, I saw Larry Hogan, the former governor of Maryland. He was on Twitter last night saying basically in a roundabout way, Donald Trump's a loser. And I'm like, buddy, you're a loser too. No one wants to go back to the party of Larry. Now, Larry Hogan may be a Republican that can win in Maryland. That's great. And I'm not discounting Republicans who can win in places like Maryland, but a guy like Larry Hogan has also been ragging on Trump for years. I don't think that's the way to go. There's a pathway for Republicans in some of those places. There is, without necessarily going fully against Trump, but just kind of running a race that's more based around the issues than based around personality. Look at what Lee Zeldin almost did in New York State. And there were parts of New York State that flipped House seats from Democrat to Republican, showing that in certain parts of the country, it cannot simply be about Trump. And Trump's got to realize that, too. And is there any evidence to suggest that he will or that he does? I don't see it. I think I've got enough, and we've got enough of a sample size to suggest that that is not something that, frankly, he's really capable of handling or understanding. And when you do have, who I believe, obviously, to be an incredibly formidable candidate in a guy like DeSantis, the governor of Florida, that's where I sit there and say, if it was Trump or a guy like Larry Hogan, no-brainer. If there appears to be a very legitimate alternative option who can win, I'm willing to take that risk as we have this conversation today. But as I watched Trump last night, I thought the speech was really good. I thought it was policy-driven. I thought it was pointing out the failures of the people in charge right now. I thought it was disciplined. Do I think that that happens over the next 2 years? History would suggest no. And this was the mistake, by the way, of Trump announcing this early. What's Trump going to do? Like, no one else is in the race. There's no primary for him to really get involved with or for him to attack anybody. Remember, Trump got in pretty late back in 2016. Hey, he got in May of 2015. There were already several candidates in the race. He came down the escalator at Trump Tower, and no one had anywhere. No one had ever heard a speech like that. And it caught everybody off guard, and then it was full steam ahead. He was off to the races, and he was rolling his way to the nomination. It's different now. There's no one for him to attack. There's no one that he's going up against. And that creates an interesting dynamic where had he waited, had Trump just taken his time and waited till other people started getting in, it's not like Trump needs to fundraise. He's got the money. But if he had waited out this thing a few more months and then he jumps in and then he becomes the bull in the china shop after all these kind of, you know, low-level guys try to get in and say, I want to be president, and then Trump swoops in and reminds him who's boss, that would have been the play to me in hindsight that always would have made more sense. Because now he's there, but he's not really running against anybody. And there's going to be people that get in the race, and then, you know, we'll see how that thing plays out from there. 5767710 is how you join us as we kick it off on a Wednesday morning on KCMO Talk Radio. Josh Hawley is going to join me at 7:30. Don't miss that conversation. Charlie Gasparino just after 8 o'clock, all part of a busy and fun Wednesday morning show. Of course, your calls as well all morning long. Pete Mundo kicking it off on KCMO Talk Radio. Well, I just saw this. This'll tick off Trump. Front page of the New York Post. You know, New York Post is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Fox News, same operation, owns the New York Post, the major tabloid that obviously gets coverage all over the nation. And the front page is about a shooting, a terrible shooting in New York City, it looks like. But then at the bottom, it just says, Florida man makes announcement. Okay. Wow. So the New York Post has made it clear, and Rupert Murdoch has made it clear on where they stand regarding Trump's big announcement last night when he came out and said that he is indeed running in 2024.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. Yes!
That was Trump last night. Pete, on the text line, 816-576-7710. What's sad is Trump does the hard stuff well and totally screws up the easy things. Last night shows how he can be presidential. The problem is he is unable to sustain it. That's right. I mean, how many times did we sit here after our State of the Union and say, damn, that was awesome. Trump killed it last night. He was on fire with these State of the Unions. And then, like, before we got to the 9 o'clock hour of this show, he'd totally blow that up, you know, calling Mika Brzezinski ugly on MSNBC or something like that. And that's why I didn't tweet out a lot last night as this speech was going on, because I wanted to watch it and really soak it up and try to have some more coherent thoughts beyond Twitter and coming to you this morning to talk about it on KCMO. But the one thing I did tweet is that I'm watching Fox News and they cut away from it in the middle of the speech, which, by the way, the speech was very good. It was way too long. Way too long. This is not a State of the Union. I don't need an hour. But anyway, they cut away from it during Hannity's show. I thought it was interesting. They cut away from it during Hannity's show to tell you how great it was. And the talking heads are on there, Leah Terrell and Pete Hegseth and these guys. And they're like, if Trump stays disciplined, you better watch out. And I'm like, okay, I agree. Trump disciplined was an unstoppable force. The problem is, it never happened. The problem is, the policy was incredible, but he was and remained his own worst enemy for 4 years. And it has continued in some ways over the last couple. So I agree. If Trump stays disciplined, he's unbeatable. But as I put up last night, your evidence to mildly suggest that will happen is what exactly? That's all I'm asking. Jonathan's in Kansas City. What's up, Jonathan? You're on KCMO kicking it off. Good morning.
Hey, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. What's happening?
Okay. So I worked early voting the last several weeks. You know, Missouri created 2 weeks of early voting. And I'm going to say this. I understand the argument, well, Trump, he brings out a lot of, conservative voters. He also brings out a lot of liberal voters to run against him. And he wasn't even on the ballot this time, and people were still showing up just because of the shadow that he cast. And, you know, you look at Schmidt, he won by 13 points. That is not great. A Parson won by 17 points just 2 years ago. So if you were to shift, a lot of the states in the middle, they shifted to the left last week. And, okay, well, maybe that's not as big of a deal in red states like this, but in purple states, you can't win the presidency if that goes on, if they just flip from purple to blue. And I understand the argument, well, you know, Grover Cleveland has done it before. Okay, well, you know what? That was a very long shot. And you could say, well, I'll go to the casino and put all my money on one number. Yeah, you could win, but you are extremely likely to lose. And that's not a good strategy if you want to, you know, invest money in for your future. Well, I'm just going to put it all on this. Like, it's possible, but it's not likely. And I just think people are with Trump. I think a lot of people just think with their feelings. They're not thinking about the strategy and, well, what's most likely to win.
I think those are great points.
In the foot.
Yeah, Jonathan, you bring up great points. You know, and as I'm watching last night, I'm flipping around some of the cable news channels and I thought to myself, why is CNN carrying this whole thing straight through? You know, like, why would CNN do that? And the big advantage is that that's what gets their people fired up. That's what gets them out, yep. And that's what gets them motivated. All they've got in many ways is Trump, right?
I would agree with you. Like, and, you know, I find it very, Ben Shapiro talks about this all the time. Like, when you let the other side define your candidates, you got to think, well, what interest do they have in defining these candidates? You know, we saw it last week. Remember, they're like, oh, let's promote Mastriano. And that ended up being a disaster. Like, there were just a lot. They tried to do it with Greitens, and that would have been a disaster in Missouri. I mean, I'm glad we were smart enough to avoid that, but you know, it's kind of scary that we have that many people who are just going to blindly follow. Well, you know, that's what they say, so we need to do the opposite. Not always. Sometimes you need to ignore what they have to say.
Yeah, exactly right. Thank you, Jonathan. I mean, that's. I would just say ask yourself that. Why? Why would CNN want to run this thing wall to wall? Ask yourself why. 5767710. Jim's in North KC. Go ahead, Jim. What do you got for me on last night?
Yeah, I just want to know where all these Republicans are, what do they want. They want somebody like Trump. It calls somebody a name, like the dirty Democrats, calls them names once in a while. Or you want to pay $6 a gallon for gas? Or you want open borders? What a bunch of sissies.
You know, here's what I would add to that then, Jim. You're talking about a general election. I agree. Listen, if Trump gets through a primary and he's facing Joe or Kamala or I don't even know where they're going to go. I agree with you, Jim. It's a no-brainer. But the conversation, what you're talking about is a general, right? What we are now in, 1 week, not even, 8 days after a midterm, is we're technically still in a primary phase. And this is where Republicans are going to have to figure out, okay, who's the best person, not just to implement great policy, we know Trump can do that, but also to win. And win in places like not just Missouri and Kansas, but Georgia and Arizona and maybe Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Those are the questions. 5767710. A lot more with you as we roll through the 6 o'clock hour. Josh Hawley at 7:30 on KCMO. Well, you got the big announcement last night that we all expected. Donald Trump announcing a 2024 presidential bid. Only 720 days to go. But who's counting? The president last night gave a speech, and it was a strong speech. It was, I think back to his State of the Union. It was too long. That's my one criticism of the speech. We didn't need an hour last night. We needed a strong 10 to 15 minutes. But that's getting picky. I'll admit that. But it was a very good speech. It was in many ways a subdued Trump. Because here's what I think Trump was trying to do last night. Trump's heard all the criticism in recent weeks about how he's undisciplined, about how, you know, if you've got somebody in the coffers and the pipeline like a Ron DeSantis potentially, then, you can get Trump policies without the Trump personality, without the brashness, maybe someone who appeals a little bit more to independent voters. So Trump clearly tried to subdue a lot of it last night. He even made somewhat of a joke about it. When he was talking about, he's like, I don't want to mention fake news. I don't want to mention fake news. I'm not going to mention fake news. And that moment was actually pretty entertaining when I heard from the president last night during the speech. So I'm watching this thing and I'm like, okay, here he is giving this speech, announcing his bid for president. And we all knew this is what was going to happen last night and how this was going to go down. Now the question is, does he clear the room enough or do people get in? Do other people get in? Other people are going to get in because consultants have too much money to make. Let's just start there. The notion that Trump's going to clear the field is not going to happen because consultants and the political party, the people on the inside, can make a lot of money when people run for president and campaigns get launched. So there are going to be other people. The question is, how many? Who are they? And does anybody stand a chance against Donald Trump? Those are the questions right now. But you watched last night. I watched last night. And now we hear from you at 5767710. Bill is in Osborne. What's up, Bill? Good morning.
Good morning. It's awfully cold up now. So anyway, I guess we're just going to have to get used to it. So anyway, I think that there's a thought process that happens as you get older, and I'm 70, be 71 in March. I know that my thinking process is changing, and I can still name all the presidents and everything else, and there's probably a lot of eighth graders can't do that, but I think Trump should be bowing out, and we're looking at Joe Biden, and what an embarrassment. The guy was in Cambodia and thinks he's in Colombia. You know, he just doesn't have any idea. Didn't he say the other day that there are 54 states? You know, and I don't know where these people come up with this kind of stuff. And it's a mental breakdown, and especially when they become tired. And Trump has more energy than most. And on the other side of it, you take DeSantis with his young kids and his wife who just survived breast cancer. Does he really want to put his kids through that and change their lives forever? You know, because they'll never be normal kids again.
So what are you suggesting? Because you're saying Trump's, I'm hearing that you're kind of like over Trump, but now I'm hearing you say, well, I don't think DeSantis should do it. So what's your?
Well, no. I mean, I'm just throwing this stuff out. I love Trump. But Trump has 40% of the base, and it's going to be hard for anybody else to win the nomination, but Trump may not have enough to win the presidency.
Yes.
And somebody like DeSantis could, you know, he could gather people to him because he's young, he's attractive, he has the family, he has success, and he's still going to give us the Trump thing. But I just don't know, you know, if he would be smart to do it either. Ivanka Trump has already said she doesn't want in because she wants to spend time with her family. It's a terrible thing to be president, you know, and you have to really be in love with yourself to do it, you know.
Well,
and,
that is true. There's no doubt about it. Everything you just said there, Bill, is absolutely true. You have to be in love with yourself to want to be president, especially in today's environment, and especially as a Republican, when you know that you're going to have an entire media establishment against you. In many ways, corporate America will also be against you. Academia will be against you. Like, it is not for somebody who doesn't have a strong backbone. You've got to have that. Now, Trump proved to have that. He made mistakes along the way. That is not even debatable, but he proved to have the backbone. Did he play his cards perfectly? No, he did not. It's one of the reasons that he lost to Joe. I was thinking about it yesterday, actually. Like, what Trump forgot about in 2020 is that the reason he won in 16 is because it was a referendum on Hillary. In 2020, Joe Biden hid in the basement, and the election became about Trump. And then Biden won. Trump would have been better served actually just doing a Biden and sitting in the basement, and he might have had a better chance if you actually think about it. I wouldn't recommend that if you're running for president, you sit in the basement, but in hindsight, that might not have been the worst play in the world. Sherman, Blue Springs, what's up, Sherman? Good morning.
Hey, how are you, Pete?
I'm good.
I was just saying to one of the other guys I was talking to on here that the thing is about Trump, and I loved him. He did a great job. His policies are awesome. But there's a lot of never Trumpers out there that are just going to stay that way. They're an automatic no in the hat next time around. And as I was telling your other guy on the radio there, that somebody like DeSantis at least could come in, and if he's saying a lot of things that are making sense, he could possibly swing some people over from the Democratic side that are leaning and hating what they're seeing right now, and to say, hey, let's give this guy a chance, just like they did, like some of the independents did with Trump the first time around.
Exactly.
But these never Trumpers, they're not going to go away.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point there, Sherman. I think you're spot on with that. Donnie's in Blue Springs. Donnie, let her rip. What's up, big guy? I know you were fired up last night.
You know what? I missed it. I missed his speech.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
Figured you would have had your popcorn ready and the whole thing.
Yep. It didn't cook fast enough, I guess.
I guess not.
I wanted to react to your comment about CNN playing the speech in its totality. And why would they do that? And you said something. All they had was Trump. Did they need anything else? My response to that would, do they need anything else? You know, you had a guy call in yesterday. I was driving in the car. I almost lost control of the car. He was giving reasons why he loved Trump. He said, that Trump's a winner. What? What? He's the biggest loser ever. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, to your point, about, you know, do the Democrats need more than Trump? Clearly not. I mean, they literally ran a midterm on Trump when Trump is not even in office, and it worked for them. So to answer your question, no.
But Trump's surrogates were there, weren't they? Did one of those deniers win anything? Did one of the Trump deniers win anything? That says it all, okay? And I'll finish with this. I thought, wow, early last week you were on, and I said, that boy's starting to come around. You said it was time to move on from Trump. Did you not?
I don't know if it was that firm, but I mean, everyone, and listen, Don, I'm not backing off on anything I've said. I've made it very clear that if Ron DeSantis runs for president, that is a far better option than Donald Trump.
Okay, but you did say that. Now, my response to you, have you changed your mind, Lindsay? Have a good day.
All right. Thank you very much, Don. Don's trying to rub a little salt in the wound. I'm not really sure what he's going for. He was more jovial than I expected. I thought he'd be in full-on meltdown mode now that he's got to look at Trump on the tube every day, you know, and he's going to hear Trump's name on the show because Trump is the newsmaker. Trump is the news king. So I'm not sure what exactly he was going for there, but he was more jovial than I anticipated. I will say that. But here's the thing as well. Ron DeSantis technically isn't running for president right now, right? He technically hasn't announced anything. Like, if it's Trump or Larry Hogan! If it's Trump or Larry Hogan, like, the Republican Party should not be going back to a guy like Larry Hogan. I know that much. But if there is a legitimate alternative option, like, I don't know, a guy who just took Florida from a swing state to an R+20 state, who I believe policy-wise would have an enormous amount of success, that's where I'm looking. And I made that very clear. I'm not backing off that statement. Now, you can call in, disagree, tell me why. I'm all cool with that at 576-7710. That's what makes this show great. That's what makes this platform great. You can interact. Thousands of people are going to hear what you say when you call up this show. And I hope that you will, because the conversation will continue with you. Josh Hawley at 7:30 this morning. Don't miss that conversation with him. We're going to talk about leadership in the U.S. Senate, what he wants to see happen next for the Republican Party. Charlie Gasparino, Fox Business, just after 8 o'clock. And, of course, don't forget, stream us this morning as you get the morning going. Smartphone, smart speaker as well. And then join us on 710 AM and 103.7 FM.
2 years ago, we were a great nation, and soon we will be a great nation again. The decline of America is being forced upon us by Biden and the radical left lunatics running our government right into the ground. This decline is not a fate we must accept. When given the choice boldly, clearly, and directly, I believe the American people will overwhelmingly reject the left's platform of national ruin, and they will embrace our platform of national greatness and glory to America. Glory.
Now, man, oh, man, oh, man, there you go. Last night, an hour-long speech from the big guy making the 2024 bid, Martin in Belton. You're on KCMO. What's up, Martin?
I just kind of wanted to comment and stuff on this reason that everybody's voting for Donald Trump or wants Donald Trump. So I started voting in the Clinton era, okay? And for the first time across the board when Donald Trump came into office, I actually felt like there was a candidate, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that truly cared about the people of this country, that truly cared about America first. I didn't see that with any other presidential candidate. Yeah, they talked a lot of stuff, you know, when they were running, but it just didn't feel like it. Okay, nobody cares, or the people that vote for Donald Trump, they don't care about a strategy as far as a strategy of how we can get more Republicans in office. That's not the reason why they voted for him. They voted for him just because of that fact, because they felt like he was the one who was going to basically thumb his nose and stuff at the establishment. So, you know, we're not going to do it that way, because that way is the same thing over and over and over again. I just wanted to say that. I think DeSantis has that also. So, I mean, it's going to be a toss-up. I'll vote for either one, obviously. but that's the reason why people voted for Trump, in my opinion. I've been asked that question, and I've asked that question many times.
And Martin, well said. Listen, that's very well said. And you're obviously, there are millions of Americans who feel and felt the same way. And that's what made Trump so unique in 2016. Even his haters, even Trump haters, have to admit that the man tapped into something that Martin just talked about there that nobody, certainly in my lifetime, has ever duplicated. But I would argue in modern American politics, at all, duplicating that mentality amongst a especially working class base that we just haven't seen and we may never see again in terms of how Trump did it 6 years ago. There's no doubt about it. The one place I'll disagree with what Martin said is that, you know, people voted for Trump. It wasn't about strategy. It wasn't about getting more Republicans elected. Well, that's a problem because we're not electing a king. We don't elect kings in this country. And for Donald Trump to be a successful president, for any Republican to be a successful president, you have to be able to work with, ideally, a Republican House and a Republican Senate. So everything you do has to be not just about getting yourself elected, but about getting as many Republicans in your party elected as you can so you can govern effectively. So you can pass the legislation that you want to pass. I don't want to live in a dictatorship. I don't want it to be about one guy every 4 years. I want the balance that we have in the system because in many ways, it prevents the worst of the worst from happening. Now, Biden's trying to buck that trend by doing things like student loan bailouts with the stroke of a pen, but that's not how the system's meant to work. So I totally understand what Martin's saying there is absolutely correct. But does the sequel play out the way the original movie did? It rarely does. History would say it rarely does. Not saying it can't, but it rarely does. Let's go to Sherry in Overland Park. Hey, Sherry, you're on KCMO. Good morning.
Good morning. If I was a liberal, if I was Pelosi or Schumer, the thing I'd want the most is for Trump to run again. And he would tear down DeSantis and anybody else because he does 90% of their work for them. They want to split those two. I think their biggest fear would be if those two come together and support each other and combine their supporters, then they'd have some serious votes to worry about.
But yeah.
I think this is great. I think they're thrilled and they want him to bash DeSantis and anybody else because I think they know they can beat him. I think they've got somebody in the wings and it ain't Biden. I think it's Michelle Obama. I've said that before. I don't know. I'm not. I just think they're thrilled. Mm-hmm. Their biggest fear is if those two put their people together and they do a good, supportive presentation because Republicans and conservatives, good, bad, right, or wrong, are tired of the fighting and the division. And that would bring a lot of women on board. If right or wrong, the women don't like it when there's fighting. So just get together. And yeah. Woo the women with love, and they'll be like, these guys are presidential. I can show my kids these guys. I work with a bunch of liberals. This is what they fear, mm-hmm. is if those two combine.
Interesting, Sherry. You know, one of them, I know many of you all know this, but one of them will have to move out of the state of Florida. You cannot have two people on the same ticket from the same state. So DeSantis or Trump, someone's got to go get an apartment in Georgia or something like that to make that work. Just to be clear on that. John Topeka, what's up, John? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was thinking that, you know, the example of Kansas, but as I was listening, you know, I think that Trump getting into this and starting it this early is a good thing because now he's going to be taking all the slings and arrows for DeSantis or whoever else is running because they're going to be focusing on their attention on Trump and trying to destroy him and leaving these other guys pretty much alone so they can, you know, run their campaign and effectively communicate their message, you know, the way they need to, because the media and everybody will be focusing on Trump and trying to destroy him. These guys, other guys like DeSantis, will be left untouched until it comes time for them to, you know, take the reins. And then hopefully Trump says, hey, you know, pass along. I'm just thinking the high road that Trump loves America and he loves, you know,
That would be, John, that right there is the most fascinating idea I've heard yet. That would be some, that would be the most selfless thing, professionally at least, in the political arena Donald Trump has ever done. John is suggesting that Trump is running for president to take the slings and arrows. The other guys kind of build up their infrastructure. And then Trump bows out and says, I was just here to be a team player, take the slings and arrows, and I'm not even looking to be president. I love you, John. I think that's living in a fantasy world, but I love an outside-the-box call. I love the outside-the-box thinking. I do. We haven't even touched on this Royals downtown baseball stadium yet. I know we all know what the topic of the day is going to be, and we will take your calls on that just after 7 here on KCMO. I want to touch on this Royals stadium. Josh Hawley at 7:30, KCMO Talk Radio. My goodness, what a morning here on KCMO Talk Radio. We are going to get, I know you want to have, and we're going to get to your calls at 5767710 on Trump, the speech last night, the announcement, what should happen moving forward. But I do want to kick off the 7 o'clock hour before we get to also Josh Hawley in about 30 minutes. This Royals news, you've heard John talk about it in the news, top and bottom of the hour. The Royals have made it official. They are looking to move away from Kauffman Stadium and get themselves downtown. And John Sherman put out a letter, a lengthy, lengthy letter from the Royals chairman that I put up on Twitter last night when it came down at Pete Mundo, if you want to see it there. But I'm just going to read part of it that says here, as you already know, it's become challenging to maintain the K. When its current lease with Jackson County concludes at the end of this decade, it will be 60 years old. The renovations required at the K to achieve our objectives would cost as much or more than the price tag to develop a new ballpark. A new home would be a far better investment, both for the local taxpayer dollars already supporting our facility and for the Kansas City community. 1 year ago, we announced we were undertaking a diligent, deliberate, and transparent process to explore the possibility of a new ballpark district. We said we would look at various locations across the city that will allow for residential, commercial, and community components. We're excited to now share that we have several leading locations under close consideration, both in downtown Kansas City and close to it. He says, we look forward to seeking input from the public over the coming months about our vision to best serve our residents and build on the momentum our city is experiencing. John Sherman adds, to accomplish this move, our plans will be contingent on continuing our public-private partnership and investment with multiple local jurisdictions along with the state of Missouri. Now, a couple of things to note, and John had this in his news. This is right, John, where they're not looking to add any taxes on top of the current sales tax situation for Jackson County. That's correct, right? Okay.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. And on top of that, so that's number one. I think that's important. The fact that the price tag is not going to go up for the taxpayer is critical. Because I don't think in this environment, with a potential recession on the horizon, there's no way the Royals are going to get more money out of the taxpayer.
Basically, speculating that the Jackson County tax would not expire, would just continue.
Okay.
We're already paying that.
Yeah,
so
just
that
roll
would be
it
extended.
Over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
sure.
So just roll over the current tax.
I don't think anything's set.
No.
But that would be the speculation right now.
And that would have to go to a vote of the people.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So that's the first thing, which is a critical component to me. The Royals are saying if you're a Jackson County taxpayer, your taxes will not go up beyond where they are right now in terms of the sales tax that pays for the stadiums currently out there at the Truman Sports Complex. But the kicker on this is potentially the Chiefs still. I mean, if you're going to roll over the sales tax and you got a $2 billion stadium to build downtown, how much of that $2 billion is being covered by this local tax from Jackson County? Can the Chiefs use some of this money if you roll over that sales tax for another 20, 30, 40 years? I mean, these are questions that I have. And I'm going to try to get John Sherman on the show tomorrow if we can. He's been on the show before, I would love to get him back on to talk about this. I'm always a little hesitant when I see speculative numbers on how many jobs will get created because of a stadium. Like, I saw this in the press release last night. It said it could create 20,000 jobs, $1.4 billion in labor income, $2.8 billion in total economic output. That is possible. I'm willing to listen to that for sure. You know what else helps create economic output if you're a baseball team? Winning games. That does it too. And that can be done quite a bit cheaper than $2 billion. So, you can put together a good team for $125 to $150 mil. If you're the Yankees, you might need $250, but I'm just pointing that out as well. So I'm not sitting here and saying I'm dead set against this. I'm not necessarily. I just want to hear more. I want to know more, and I want to learn more, John.
John Sherman mentioned it. He wrote a letter, basically.
Yes.
So it's not some. If we say he said, it's more that he indicated, I guess, on the paper. So they're looking to do a baseball district, okay? And, you know, if you're thinking in terms of just building a stadium, think more of, an area around that. I think they're more interested in that. Again, nothing specified, but he did call it a baseball stadium district.
The district,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know.
A little more area might be required than another location to do that. So
I would think, and I think you're right to bring that up. Like, I know they've got that over in St. Louis, and there's plenty of cities that do kind of have that feel. You go to Arlington, Texas, and they've got a Texas Live entertainment facility next to the new ballpark the Rangers built a couple of years ago. But to me, you already have that in Power and Light. Now, if this brings economic and dollars to Power and Light or more 81 nights a year, because the Royals are right outside of Power and Light, let's say just east of T-Mobile, northeast of T-Mobile by City Hall, that's a worthy conversation. Absolutely a worthy conversation to have. I'm not against it. But I'm telling you, I just want to see more in terms of where these numbers of $1 billion of economic input here and 20,000 jobs there. I want to see what that entails and what that actually means and what that looks like. And I don't think that's unreasonable at all to ask if you're the taxpayer in Jackson County or Kansas City, for that matter. So, you know, the text line 816-576-7710. Pete, this is going to increase ticket prices. How long are people going to pay an increase in ticket prices? Well, it's going to ultimately come down to if the team's good. That's how it works in any new city. The first year or two, you get extra people to the ballpark because they want to see the brand new ballpark. And then, like everything else in sports, is your team winning? If it is, people will buy the tickets. If they're not, it's going to be a harder sell. That's sports in a nutshell.
Yeah, the only thing that we know for certain is the Royals officially expressed an interest in a downtown stadium. We've been speculating, right?
Yes.
And so the Royals, now John Sherman, has indicated that interest. So that becomes, I guess, more official. Now more questions pop up than ever before, because now we end the speculation and get into serious stuff. Kansas City, Mayor Lucas wants to know, what's the city's part of this besides just Jackson County's
yes.
obligation, et cetera, and all the questions that you brought up as well.
And now we'll have to ask Mayor Lucas about this tomorrow morning. I know where that conversation's going tomorrow.
And I know they mentioned a couple different places where the location could be, but on the rendering, I see that it's at 12th and Cherry, which is close to the police department.
Yeah, like. Right by City Hall,
mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, that's right next to City Hall.
So that'd be a nice little spot. There's some parking around there already, too. So
there is. Yeah, and that's right. It's exactly where I was thinking, just kind of north-northeast of T-Mobile and Power and Light is where that would be. Literally due east of City Hall is where I always thought the main location made the most amount of sense in that downtown area. There's going to be a big push for 18th and Vine. I guarantee you that's going to be a thing. There's a lot between Power and Light and 18th and Vine. It's not like you're just walking around the corner. So, but I guarantee you that's going to be a big push as well, and that's going to get very, very, very political. And it's going to be uncomfortable, but it's going to get racial too. I hate to say it, but it will. I guarantee you it will. Josh Hawley's going to join me at 7:30 this morning. He's 20 minutes away. We'll get to you at 576-7710. The Trumpster with the big announcement last night. I know you want to chime in. We'll do that before we get to Josh Hawley at 7:30. Charlie Gasparino, Fox Business Network at 8. on KCMO Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
There he was, the big guy last night, 2024, Donald Trump making it official. He is, yes, indeed, running for president. And I'm just glad he did it with plenty of time to spare. Only 721 days to go until Election Day 2024. My goodness. Oh, gosh, here we go. We are off to the races. And I know we have been, some of you patiently waiting. Let's go to Eli. He's in Kansas City. Eli, good morning. You're on KCMO.
Good morning. I think there's probably not a lot of point in debating whether or not he should have announced his candidacy. The reality is he did. I think there were a lot safer ways for him to try and restore his legacy and kind of retain his position as kingmaker in the party. But the reality is he's announced his candidacy, but not only does he not have the support of the media, which he would never have, he doesn't even have the support of a plurality of Republicans, and maybe it appears not even the entirety of his own family. So my hope would be at this point that our you know, top-tier candidates like DeSantis, like some of these others, would hold off as long as possible, because I think as he gets kind of cornered further and further, as he realizes he doesn't have the Republican support that he once had, as he realizes his entire family's not behind him in this and just the ramifications of those things, I think he'll start to self-destruct. And I would hate to see a DeSantis or someone else get in too early and get involved in that mudslinging. I think he'll implode, and I think his candidacy will implode in, on itself, just given the fact that he doesn't have the support that he had the first time around.
Eli, very interesting. You know, what you're referencing there is and good stuff. Ivanka Trump put out a statement last night that said, "I love my father very much. This time around, I'm choosing to prioritize my young children and the private life we are creating as a family. I do not plan to be involved in politics. While I will always love and support my father going forward, I will do so outside the political arena. I'm grateful to have had the honor of serving the American people, and I will always be proud of many of our administration's accomplishments." That is the statement from Ivanka Trump. So she's out. Now, to your point about, you know, Trump, who's he going to go after, self-imploding, DeSantis. DeSantis now benefits from the standpoint of if he's going to get in, and we can't talk like DeSantis is in this race. He's obviously not. But he benefits because Trump looks like he pulled a quick trigger on this thing because he had to. Like, I heard the analogy, gosh, who gave the analogy yesterday? I can't think of where I heard the analogy, but I thought it was a great analogy. Where Trump, it was a poker analogy. And Trump basically pushed all his chips into the middle of the table here. Because if you play Texas Hold'em, you guys play poker in there? You got any poker players in the room? I used to play a decent amount.
It's been a while, but I've played.
All right. How about John? John, you a big poker guy?
I watch more poker than golf.
Okay. Not saying much, but okay.
No, not much of a player, but I have watched on TV.
Well,
I get the concept.
Texas Hold'em. If you've got a pair of aces, you slow play it, right? You want everybody in the hand before the flop. If you got pocket twos before the flop and you're sitting at a table of nine people playing poker, you're trying to clean up as quickly as you can. You don't want a lot of people in the hand if you've got pocket twos, because you're looking at pocket twos and then the flop comes and you're saying to yourself, well, you know, I mean, anybody could have hit a pair at that point. Unless you're hitting trips on the flop with another two, you're probably behind the eight ball. So what do you do if you're sitting on pocket twos? You make a big pre-flop raise. You maybe throw all your chips into the middle of the table because you don't want a lot of people going up against you. Trump's sitting on pocket twos. He's not sitting on pocket aces. He's not sitting on pocket kings. Heck, he's not sitting on ace king. He's sitting on pocket twos, and he knows that. And he knows he has got to do everything he can to clear the field, because if he does get a singular opponent, a formidable singular opponent, Republicans may say, hey, 2016 was awesome. You guys did a really good job on policy. I just don't want to do this again. I you know, it was a great 4 years. It ended in a really unfortunate way. I don't want to do this again. If there's a credible opponent. And, you know, I mean, we keep talking about DeSantis being that person. If he decides to be that person, then so be it. But I keep seeing this thing about, DeSantis, wait till 2028. Why would he do that? He's not going to be governor of Florida in 2028. You get these small windows in politics where you are red hot. And if you don't take advantage of them, they oftentimes don't come back. That's a fact. Yeah, Ron won in 28. It'll be fine. We don't know what the world's going to look like in 28. Never mind who's going to be the next hot presidential candidate in 28. That's why you don't wait if you're him. You know, here's another big takeaway that frankly should apply to politics across the board right now. But I'm wondering why the old people won't let us move on from them. And that's a bipartisan statement. Joe Biden's 80. Pelosi's 82. Trump's 76. Schumer is 71. McConnell's 80. Why can't we move on to the future? I mean, regardless of which way you think it goes, whether it's who's going to be the next Senate Majority Leader, or I should say Senate Minority Leader for the Republicans, you know, McConnell's 80, Trump's 76. Can we not move on? In 2018, Democrats wiped out the House GOP. In 2020, they took the presidency. In 2021, took the Senate. In 2022, they just beat back a red wave. There's only a couple of things that all those have in common. One is Trump. The other is Ronna McDaniel, who's in charge of the GOP. She should be out of a job yesterday. It's time to read the room a little bit. It's time to move on. Can we let a younger generation take over, please? Is that too much to ask,
age,
John?
Age is an age-old problem. When I was a kid, we thought the same thing.
I mean, but here's
the
thing.
Now I'm that old guy.
Well, here's the thing. John, you're a pup compared to these guys.
Well, I'm with you there, but I guess we reflect inward as voters. I don't know. At least we could say here in Missouri and Kansas, we've kind of flipped that script, at least.
A little bit.
A little bit.
But, you know, John, you know, you're in the front end of your 60s. I'd sign up for guys in their 60s right now.
Touche.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, I'm not looking for 42-year-olds. I'll take 62 in a heartbeat. I just don't want 82 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's too much to ask. Done enough damage. Victor's in Parkville. Hello, Victor. You're on KCMO. Good morning.
Good morning, Pete. Okay, you'll sign up for 62. I'll take that under advisement.
Okay. Victor, 24. Yeah, I can see the yard sign already.
Well, if I'd won that $1.9 billion, that was a consideration. Hey, I did call about Trump. I just wanted to make a comment about Josh there for a second. 2024 is too soon for Josh, but I look forward to voting for him in the future.
Well, he's going to get reelected for Senate in 24.
Oh, absolutely. But I look forward to someday, you know, White House bound. But there's two times in the last 60 years he was wrong about where the Republicans actually came up with something. And that was the Contract with America and the Tea Party. And they won overwhelmingly, but they did nothing with it. And that's where the Republicans really, really, the mainstream Republican, the D.C. Republicans, as he put it, they failed the people. And we just got ticked off. We're just like, okay, fine, what's the point? So that's where Trump came in. And when Trump came in, that's when a lot of stuff started getting done. Now, what we saw the other night.
Hold on.
Okay.
In fairness to the Tea Party, they couldn't do anything because they didn't have the White House.
That's true.
They couldn't. You can't be mad at the Tea Party. They couldn't do anything with Barack Obama as president. So to say that, you know, Trump fixed it because Trump had a Republican Senate and a Republican House.
But did they tie up the litigation or legislation? Did they continue to put forth? Did they lose sight of the goal, or did they finally just give up and just become part of the Washington establishment?
Well, and by the way, I know you want to make a Trump point, and I'll let you make it, Victor. But the other thing is this. Trump had nothing to do with the Tea Party. Trump, in many ways, was the anti-Tea. Trump did not take a lot of, outside of the freedom, the basic freedom element, Trump really was not a Tea Party guy. He was not about fiscal conservatism or anything.
No, not at all. I agree with you. What Trump was Trump was the person who was running under the Republican banner that said, I'm going to, this is the thing that Trump did. This is part of what I was going to make. He not just pointed out what the problems were, he was offering solutions. And this is what Republicans and Americans as a whole, other than the extreme left wing who, you know, want another Soviet Union. Okay, we want those solutions to the problems. He did what Rush Limbaugh did. Rush Limbaugh spoke to the people. He spoke what people wanted, not just what we wanted to hear, but what we were thinking.
Yes.
Trump came out and said, this is what the problem is. We all went, duh.
So let me ask you then.
Oh, sure.
Because I want to get to some other folks. Round two, 24, are you all in or are you kind of hesitant or skeptical?
Well, okay, let me just go ahead. I'll go through this real quick. Last night we saw the new and improved ultra MAGA Trump. Hopefully he'll be able to maintain that. I agree with you. It's going to be a hard 720 days for him. What he needs to do is get away from 2020. But what he does need to do is just when it comes up, just say, you know what? 2,000 mules, Mike Lindell, that they've got all the information out there.
Yeah. Victor, I promise you he is not getting elected in 24 talking about Mike Lindell, unless he's talking about how great the pillows are. Come on. Come on, Victor.
I know that. Okay. But as far as 2020 went, they would have found as many votes as they needed. But the reason we did not, there's a lot to unpack with what a lot of your callers brought up. The reason we did not do as well in Missouri as we would have liked.
Vic, I want to get to some other folks, my man. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. Tammy and Shawnee. Go ahead, Tammy.
Hey, good morning, Pete. I just want to say that our forefathers did not create the jobs of being a legislator, a congressman, to be a lifetime commitment, a lifetime job for them. They created those jobs so that they could serve the people and then go on and let someone else come in there and serve the people. But instead, we have a whole slew of people working in Congress and in Senate, and they are doing nothing but the same old thing and just basically living off the teat of the American people. And it's sickening. They need to get out of there. They've been up there for 60, 50 years. Move on and let some new blood in. And why we don't elect new people, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting and disappointing.
That is true. I mean, you know, I've heard both ends, Tammy, thank you, of the term limits argument. I don't think it creates a utopia in politics because, as people have described to me, with term limits, then the people in party really are the people that know the system the best, and that would be the lobbyists. Now, Trump brought some of this up last night where, you know, he would advocate for term limits. He would push the fact that you can't just become a lobbyist for life after you spend time in D.C. The Trump speech was great in terms of just the words. The words of Trump's were great last night. The question is not the words. The question is not what was said or what was in the teleprompter. The question is simply this. Who's the best messenger? That's really it. That's the only question that really needs to be answered. And that, you know, we've got to figure out. Now that we're 720 days out. My gosh. So Trump last night, the best speech, the best part of the speech, and the not so best part of the speech. I'm going to play each of them for you here on KCMO Talk Radio. Good to be with you on a Wednesday morning. So the best part last night of Trump's speech as he announces 2024 was this. Let's take a listen.
We will win because we will fight with every measure of our strength and with every ounce of our energy to lift up the working men and working women of America and to restore the fabric of this nation. The radical left Democrats have embraced an extreme ideology of government domination and control. Our approach is the opposite, one based on freedom, values, individual responsibility, and just plain common sense. It's common sense.
And he's right about that. A lot of it economically is common sense. That's not taking anything away from the economic accomplishments pre-COVID. And we've gone through them a ton on this show. I mean, you look at January of 2020, right before COVID. And I've gone through these numbers with you before. But what you saw before COVID hit was that those at the lowest end of the socioeconomic income scale were making and were getting bigger raises and seeing their wages go up by a higher percentage than those at the higher end of the income scale. They were seeing double-digit increases year over year in their wages. They were getting the highest. Now, you might say, well, you know, going from $15 an hour to $17 an hour is great, but, you know, that's because the rich guy's already making $1 million a year. I'm just making up numbers here. It doesn't matter. The point is this. You want to see wages go up at the lowest end of the income scale at a faster rate than the higher end. That's what you want to see. And you don't want that to be because of government handouts or government giveaways. You want that to be because of genuine economic growth. And because, by the way, you've got less competition on the lower end, potentially, as people move up the socioeconomic ladder. Those are good things for America. And Trump had that going pre-COVID in a way that nobody else had had in a very long time. And while some people, and I'm seeing the text line right now, people are saying, Pete, the best line was when he said he was going to overhaul the DOJ. Like, those are important. Don't get me wrong, and Trump's certainly got plenty of bones to pick, and we all should with the politicization of the DOJ and the major bureaucracies. But that's more of a base play. Not saying it's a bad play, but Trump will not get elected in 2024 talking about overhauling the DOJ. I'm sorry, he won't. Independent voters are not going to come up and vote for Trump because, well, he's going after the DOJ. People are hurting. People are hurting economically. There was not some big endorsement of Joe Biden's economic policies last week. That's not what it happened. It was more about, hey, we don't really like either side, but I guess maybe we kind of like Democrats a little bit more, or we like Republicans a little bit less, whichever way you want to look at it. There was not some big endorsement for Joe Biden's economic policies last week. But I promise you, if the focus is on things like the DOJ, not saying it's not important or it shouldn't be talked about, but it will not win anybody. I don't care if it's Trump, DeSantis, whoever. That's not going to be the thing that wins swing voters in 24. It won't be. So that was Trump's best line of the night. Trump's worst line of the night. Or I don't even know if this will be the worst line, because I thought overall the speech, just the words of the speech were really good. The messenger, that's the part to debate. But the words of the speech, I had zero problems with, except for this part, because this part kind of overblows and overstates reality.
I do want to point out that in the midterms, my endorsement success rate was 232 wins and only 22 losses. You don't hear that from the media. And this is an elegant night and an elegant press. A place, and I'm not going to use the term fake news media.
But I did.
So we're going to keep it very elegant. But you don't hear that from the media. But I think you will, because people are starting to see what happened. That's some score. And in the primaries, it was 98.6%.
Is that the most Trump thing ever? I'm not going to say it, but I totally just said it. I'm not going to call them the fake news. This place is too elegant for that, as I call them fake news. Oh, gosh. Okay, but the reason that line is very misleading, he's like, I went 232 wins on my endorsements, 22 losses. Okay. I'll give you a prime example of what one of those wins are. If you were at Politics in a Pint with Mark Alford a couple of weeks ago, Mark got an endorsement from Donald Trump the week before the election. Are we really going to sit there and call Donald Trump's endorsement of Mark Alford a win? I mean, let's Mark Alford was going to win no matter what. All right. Donald Trump calling Mark Alford while he's sitting in traffic on the Grandview Triangle is not really something I'm looking at and saying, whoa, boy, this guy's got a lot of juice. He endorsed Alford a week before the election and Alford won. Alford was going to win. I mean, it's great that Trump called him up. I think it's outstanding. But come on, let's not juice the numbers like that. Please.
He endorsed Mahomes for MVP.
Thank you for that, John. Very good. So it's like, okay, the races that mattered, the big races where the guy picked a primary candidate in a swing district or a swing state Those didn't go well. The question is not about Trump's popularity to win over the base Republican voter. We know he can do that, but you can't win elections that way, national elections that way. We learned that last week. And if you look at the major races where there were toss-ups, Trump's candidates were 2 for 16. He lost governor's races. Kerry Lake, Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania, Tudor Dixon in Michigan. He won Lombardo in Nevada, lost Perdue, who tried to primary Brian Kemp in Georgia. In the U.S. Senate, lost Blake Masters in Arizona, lost Oz in Pennsylvania, lost Laxalt in Nevada. Herschel's going to a runoff in Georgia. We'll see how that plays out. Lost Bolduc in New Hampshire. And then there were 4 Secretary of State races he jumped in. He lost all 4 of those. So, like, I get it. 232 wins and 22 losses. But it's really like, I'm sorry, I'm not putting an endorsement of Mark Alford on the same level of Dr. Oz. We don't count those, like, we don't count preseason games and winning a preseason game as a regular season win in the NFL. And that's kind of the analogy of what's happening here. Well, we have reached the 9 o'clock hour of the show. It's good to be here on KCMO Talk Radio. So the big announcement came last night. Donald Trump is coming back.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
That was the announcement last night. He is running in 2024. Trying to obviously get ahead of anybody else who may run, clear the field possibly, maybe, intimidate the field to say, you know what, Trump's in, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to stay out. A lot of reasons for that. Some make sense, some don't make sense. But either way, the main person that people perceive to be most likely to be able to beat Donald Trump, if anybody can, is Ron DeSantis, Florida's governor. Ron DeSantis is not running for president. Ron DeSantis has not said a word about running for president. Now, I can tell you, in talking to people in his inner circle, there is a lot of interest there. A lot of interest. People bring up his family, young family. Do they want to do it? My understanding, in the people I've talked to, is that his wife is very much on board with this, despite the fact that they have 3 young kids. So once again, we don't know what he's going to do. We don't know how it's going to play out. But if there's one guy who could potentially do it against Trump, I believe it's a Ron DeSantis. So yesterday, Ron DeSantis was finally asked during a press conference about Trump's attacks on him as of late. Told the Wall Street Journal he shouldn't get in. He's got dirt on him. Ron DeSanctimonious. All these things which just are not helpful. Last night's Trump speech was great. He should focus his energy on attacking, Democrats, not fellow Republicans who aren't even in a primary yet. But that's what Trump does. And that's what worked for him effectively in 2016. Trump gets under your skin so much, he forces you to respond. That's how Marco Rubio ends up talking about Donald Trump's penis, right? Like, remember that? He's got tiny hands, so he's got a little wiener. Remember that whole thing? So, like, that's how that all goes down. That's how that all plays out. Trump just gets under your skin so much as a bulldog, as a fighter, that he basically makes you snap. And that's what he's trying to do right now to Ron DeSantis. He's trying to get DeSantis to basically blow himself up. And DeSantis has not yet taken that bait, and he's not going to do it, as far as I can tell. He was asked yesterday about Trump and what Trump has said recently about him. And here's what Ron DeSantis had to say.
Well, one of the things I've learned in this job is when you're leading, when you're getting things done, yeah, you take incoming fire. That's just the nature of it. I roll out of bed in the morning. I've got corporate media outlets that have a spasm, just the fact that I'm getting up in the morning and it's constantly attacking. And this is just what's happened. I don't think any governor got attacked more, particularly by corporate media, than me over my 4-year term. And yet, I think what you learn is all that's just noise. And really what matters is, are you leading? Are you getting in front of issues? Are you delivering results for people? And are you standing up for folks? And if you do that, then none of that stuff matters. And that's what we've done. We focused on results and leadership. And, you know, at the end of the day, I would just tell people to go check out the scoreboard from last Tuesday night. The fact of the matter is...
So that was Ron DeSantis yesterday in the only quasi-response he has ever given in the last week or so to the attacks from Donald Trump. And the check the scoreboard line is going to be the one that stands out because he just won his governor's race by 20 points. Donald Trump won Florida by, I think, 3 or 4 points. So that's his, when he says check the scoreboard, he's basically saying, look at what I did and look at how much I won by, is what Ron DeSantis is doing there. And he was smart to never mention Trump by name. He didn't actually directly respond to saying, I've got this to say to Donald Trump. He didn't do that. Smart to do. He basically just took the high road. And that's where I think when a primary does come, depending on how it plays out with Trump and other Republicans, Trump's strategy should probably change. Because in 2016, no one had any idea what they were about to get into when Donald Trump got into politics. No one had ever seen anything like it. No one had ever experienced anything like it. Just dragging it down in the mud and literally just going after people. And it worked. And by the way, 4 years of Trump, we're good for America. I will reiterate that and say that till the day I die. But the primary, obviously, was pretty nasty in the process, right? But if that's going to be the strategy for Trump, people are, I think, smarter in terms of how they deal with it, especially a guy like Ron DeSantis, who is very smart and very sharp. Because you've seen the playbook before. It's like the Chiefs. The Chiefs play the Bills a few weeks ago. You think they opened up the whole playbook to the Buffalo Bills in that game? No, they didn't, because they realized that's a team that they could see in the AFC Championship game. So you want to mix up the playbook a little bit. It's not obvious to me that Trump is going to mix up the playbook or use a different playbook at all. I think Trump knows his playbook. It's very unlikely that at 76 years old you change your playbook of what has worked for you in your life. So I don't anticipate that changing. But now someone like Ron DeSantis, who has watched the last 6 years unfold, who has, you know, kind of understood how that playbook works in primaries, he's going to be able to say, okay, I see what's happening here. Trump is trying to drag him into a mud fight. And he would be smart to kind of do what he did yesterday and stay out of it. And now Trump would also be smart to take the high road in this thing as well. Let both guys take the high road. If you go to a primary, then may the best man win, John.
A classic gesture in sportsmanship when facing unsportsmanlike conduct, point to the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's
right. Don't have to say anything. You just tell them, hey, look at scoreboard.
Yeah, scoreboard. I mean, that's what happens all the time, right? So that's what makes this and what I believe is going to make this different. Now, I saw this, and there's a lot of different angles that are coming out of last night. I saw Charlie Kirk put this up on social media a few minutes ago. And Charlie's been on the show, good guy. But I think there's a little bit of something he's missing here. So Charlie Kirk puts out on Twitter, quote, "The immediate coordinated mass denunciation of Donald Trump's new presidential run by everyone from NPR to National Review is recreating the exact one man versus the system reality that helped him win in 2016. Now, there's no doubt that there is some truth to that. But I think that's rewriting history as well. A couple of things happened in 2016 that we need to remember. Number one, in the primary, there were 12 people in the primary. And they all just figured Donald Trump was eventually going to implode. And he never did. And he picked off primaries with 25, 30, 35%, and he kept rolling up primary victories. And these, you know, dumb establishment Republicans were all like, oh, don't worry, Trump's going to blow himself up, without realizing that he was first off resonating with people in a way that no other politician really had. That's number one. And number two, it was a numbers game. Trump knew that as long as there were several people in the race, he could win a primary with 30 to 35% in every state. So Trump was smart to play a numbers game and said, if you guys are going to keep being stupid enough to run multiple people, well, guess what? I'm going to ride the wave and ride this momentum. And then number two, there's no doubt that Trump tapped into something in 2016 that we've talked about many times that won him working class voters in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan that no one thought a Republican could ever do again. That's all true. But let's not forget about a little person named Hillary Clinton, who certainly didn't hurt in terms of Trump becoming president, because that election became a referendum on her, on the Clinton corruption machine, and Trump took advantage of that. And if we're going to rewrite or if we're going to write the history books properly, both those things have to be part of the equation and have to be part of the conversation when discussing this and not just saying, look, here we go again. It's Trump against the system. It's not the same playbook. It's not. And it's also rewriting how 2016 in many ways actually went down. 5767710. We'll get to you coming up. I know a lot of you do want to chime in as we hit 9:15 on a Wednesday morning on KCMO. Our caller of the day, Chris DeGaulle, is going to be here at 10. Don't forget, stream us as well, not just on 710 AM and 103.7 FM, but stream us on your smartphone, smart speaker, or KCMOtalkradio.com. Well, don't forget, President Trump did remind voters last night of his successes over his 4 years in office, and a special shout-out to the Latinos.
In 2020, I received the largest number of votes of any sitting president in history, by a lot, and we will do it again, but with even more votes this time. Many have noted that huge gains we have made with Latino voters, and I believe we will set even greater records with this crucial vote in 2024. The Hispanic voter, the Latino voter, has been
Latino.
Unbelievable.
How does he do that? How does Trump do that with his enunciation? Latino. I love it. It reminds me of when he was running in 2016. Remember the Cinco de Mayo tweet that he had up? The Trump Cinco de Mayo tweet? Hispanics love me. He's got double thumbs up with a taco bowl or something like that.
Wasn't it Taco Bell?
No, I think it was like some... I think it was like a Mexican restaurant in Trump Tower or something like that. Yeah.
Like a taco salad?
Yeah, it was like a taco salad. Gosh, let me find that. Yeah, here it is. Oh, gosh, 2016. Trump's sitting there eating like a taco bowl, and it says, Happy Cinco de Mayo. The best taco bowls are made in Trump Tower Grill. I love Hispanics.
That's right, and they love him. According to him.
Now, here's what's crazy about this, right? Like, Trump deserves an enormous amount of credit for remaking, and Charlie Gasparino talked about this morning on the show. He deserves an enormous amount of credit for remaking the Republican Party based on the issues away from the globalist mentality into a little bit more populist, maintaining a lot of the core values of the party, but also teaching the party how to fight, first off, and then also bringing in a little less of an establishment globalist mentality to that. He deserves credit for that. And that is what is bringing, in many ways, along with the way the Democratic Party has completely turned off working class people, but that has brought in large part, Latino and black voters, more so Latino voters at a much higher clip, into the party. Republicans always thought that they had to bring Latinos into the party by doing things like, yeah, we're going to be pro-abortion, and we're going to go ahead and be pro-illegal immigration, because that's what Hispanic voters want. Donald Trump, and now certainly Ron DeSantis in Florida, have proven that's not true. Ron DeSantis was shipping illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, putting them at Obama's front door, and he won Hispanics. He won Miami-Dade County, a county Hillary Clinton won by 30 points 6 years ago. So the Republican establishment was dead wrong about how to win Hispanic voters. Trump laid the foundation for that, and now you've seen the party and people like Ron DeSantis carry that torch and bring that across the finish line in their own races. But I just remember back to, you know, 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago now. Oh, look at Trump. He's got a picture of himself with a taco bowl talking about his love for Hispanics. He's done. He's finished. And it was like, no, it's wrong. You guys are wrong. Joe's in KCK. What's up, Joe? Good morning.
Yeah, who won the last election? An old man named Joe. Trump, he's a good street fighter. He's somewhat of a good fighter coming in, but when he has a position, he falls apart. The Democrats won. He doesn't know how to unite the Republican Party, if you ask me, and he'll lose again big time, and they'll snatch it right out of his hand. They'll say, what you going to do about it? He went to Mar-a-Lago. He raided your house. What you going to do about it? Completely nothing.
Now, when you say, what was your line about policy? He collapses or something? What do you mean by that?
Oh, okay. What I said was when he gets up there, mm-hmm. in presidency, he collapses. When things get tough, he collapses because he ain't got no backup because he's not a team player. He doesn't unite the Republican Party at all. Mm-hmm. He makes enemies within the Republic Party, and they went to go raid his house, and he was in the basement with Joe. You didn't hear nothing about him. Nobody came to his aid.
I think a lot of Republicans, Joe. Listen, I get if your point, generally speaking, and what I'm hearing from you is that Republicans don't like that Trump has, over the last couple of weeks, attacked them. I don't know. There was a lot of uproar, though, after Mar-a-Lago, so I'm not sure about your angle there. But if your point is that Trump is going to have a tough time uniting Republicans over the next year, and then on top of that, Democrats will be very unified, I could see that playing out that way, to your point. There's no doubt that there is nothing that unifies Democrats like Donald Trump. That is clearly true. There's no doubt about it. The other part I'm not so sure about. Mike in Olathe. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I'm listening to all this, and I'm probably like a lot of people. I love DeSantis. I love the idea of him taking the helm, if you will, because I don't think there's anyone that can fight knowing the rules on the inside like he in the way of America First. But then I watched Trump last night, and that was one of the better speeches he's given. But it's like, you can't lose sight of the fact, though. I don't think he did it because of weakness either. I think he did it because he promised he was giving a speech. And I think it's a strategy to get ahead of this growing snowball, as Victor Davis Hanson put it, of DeSantis support going on in Washington and around the country. The part about that is, as a guy that loved Trump and was, I knew he was right for the time, it's hard for me to get past all the crap that we had to deal with for 4 years, even though some of it was unfair. And do we want to go through that again? But then how do we get his rabid supporters to get behind DeSantis without him doing it first? Does DeSantis have to make him a deal he can't refuse, make him the ambassador to go negotiate with major countries around the world, keep his name and his face in the forefront, do what he does well? I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And I don't know if DeSantis holds his powder, keeps it dry, or if he's going to have to make a decision soon. I don't know, and I think that's what a lot of people like me are thinking right now. We want DeSantis, but we don't want the party to blow up and lose, you know, because of what's going to happen now in the next few months.
Yeah, and that's what makes this a fascinating situation to follow, Mike, and see how it plays out. I can't speak to when DeSantis would announce. I mean, typically your people will begin to announce like early spring of the year prior. So that would happen in March. Trump's obviously changed that timeline. He's already done it. But if I'm DeSantis, you can keep that powder dry for a while now. He could wait till next fall if he wanted to.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.